their interests change. They move on. They go to the next thing. We aren't playing any Malifaux right now. I would love to. I've set it up half a dozen times since we got locked in. And Eli has humored me with two turns of Henchman Hardcore. The other two just walk away.
Howdy friends, Craig here. We talked to two Malifaux players who are also parents of kids who play Malifaux and other tabletop games. We talk about how they introduce the game to their kids, ways that they approach to slowly teach the games, how they adjusted as the interests of their kids changed. We talk about some of their success stories, some of their mistakes. We talk about some of the skill sets that kids can pick up by gaming. Last but not least, I actually get a chance to talk to the kids to learn from their perspective what it's like to have parents who play games. Enjoy!
Playing a tabletop strategy game allows you to unplug and test your skills against friends. Every week, Third Floor Wars delivers useful strategies, discussions, battle reports, and reviews to tabletop games like Malifaux. If you want to get better at the games you already play, or discover the games other people are playing, you are in the right place. Craig and Ray welcome you to the Third Floor and the Tabletop Talk Broadcast.
Craig here on the Third Floor. Today we're going to talk to two parents who have shared their hobby and have hobby playing kids. And I want to learn kind of how that happened and how they passed it down. So my guests today are Keith Suderman and Sarah Ann LaHaye. Now, Sarah Ann comes out of Canada, and her and I have been chatting on Facebook, talking about maybe incorporating some of the borderland Canadian players in the USFT, and she's been a big part in building the Malifaux community in her area. And her husband have a really nice blog that focuses on all on hobbying and gaming in general. I'll have a link to it in the show notes, and we'll talk about it a little bit later. I've been reading it over the last couple days, and there's some good stuff in there. So, Sarah Ann, welcome to the Third Floor.
Thank you very much, Craig. I'm really excited to be here.
So, Sarah Ann, I'd be curious, how did you end up finding tabletop gaming?
Well, back around my 16th birthday, a bunch of friends of mine had given me some gift certificates to a local game store. I was a really big Lord of the Rings nerd at the time, but had no knowledge of any other aspect of the hobby, so they thought I'd really like to get the playing card games for Lord of the Rings, and that was kind of the gateway that got into it. Walked into that store, and on a bunch of levels, it totally, you know, took over my life and changed things for me. One of the things that really is kind of a crazy part of it was that game store was actually owned by my now husband. So that was how we met also.
I was going to ask about how that came together.
Yeah, so that, so really, we've been a family of gamers right from the start and gone from there, so.
So you were 16 when you first went to the game store and you kind of first exposed to it, and you said you were a Lord of the Rings nerd. Now, how did that happen? So how did you, was it through the books, through the movies, a combination?
So actually, I hate to admit it, but it was through the movies. Read all the books after, and then some. I actually used to work at one of the movie theaters down in Toronto, and as our big Christmas party, we got to see the first Lord of the Rings movie 2 weeks before release, which at the time I thought, okay, this looks interesting, and just blew my mind. And yeah, that was that's a pretty cool bragging rights that I got to see it before most people going forward. And that just cemented my my love of all things fantasy and sci-fi and nerd and geek.
No kidding. So really, at that point, you had really, before then, you were not a fantasy reader or a science fiction person. That was really kind of the first time you got into it, or?
Yeah, I mean, it was always in the background. With my parents, they were definitely more on that fantasy bent. My dad was a like old school Tolkien reader, but it never for some reason popped up in my own childhood. I have no idea now how that happened. Even my dad to this day is like, how did we miss the boat on that one? Especially, you know, considering now being the giant geek that I am. But yeah, so it was kind of interesting how that worked out.
And then you mentioned that your husband-to-be, he ran the game store. And now you, I shouldn't assume anything. I mean, I assume that there was a gap between you coming there as a 16-year-old and you guys dating. How did that come together?
Yes,
where you guys ended up discovering each other.
So it was frequented the store quite a bit with friends of mine, and then really to complicate things, then he ended up hiring me. Well, not him. One of his business partners actually ended up hiring me. So I did work in the store. So it, you know, and we worked alongside each other for quite a few years before we decided to kind of go the relationship side. But yeah, it was
Again,
it's, you know, it's in our family's DNA for sure. And it's something that
it really is, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Very, you know, very cool.
Makes for a good story. It's a little bit of a hard to believe when I look back, but at the same time, you know, things happen, I think, for a reason. So it.
That's neat. That's really, really neat. So my second guest, Keith. Now, Keith, technically, you've heard his voice on the show before. Keith is one of our patrons, and he was kind enough to record one of the bumpers. And you've probably heard me talk about his kids before. His sons have actually also been on the show via those bumpers as well. So, Keith, welcome to the third floor.
Hey, thanks, Craig. It's good to be here.
So, Keith, how about you? How did you end up nerding out and finding tabletop gaming?
So I was maybe 13, 14 years old. It was the early 80s. And the pastor's kid at my little Mennonite church came to me, and his aunt had just given him a game, and it just had books, no board. And he says, "I don't know how to play this. Can you help me?" And we sat there in the basement. We paged through that thing, and we finally figured out. It was called Dungeons and Dragons. And we figured this thing out. It took a lot of effort. But once we got it figured out, it was what we did. It was so awesome, and we met every night after school, and we leveled up our characters, and we cleared dungeons. It's beautiful.
It's funny. I'm gonna age myself and date you as well at the same time, Keith, because you and I are roughly about the same age, and you know, I went through the same process. I was probably 14, 15, a little bit older than you when I discovered the Red Box Dungeons and Dragons, and, you know, so different. I mean, the only thing that, you know, was out there for gaming was, you know, Sorry and Game of Life and, you know, Monopoly and stuff. And you come across this thing, and you did. You had to sit down there and look at it and just kind of figure out what the heck is going on here.
There was no one to help you. No one else had done it.
No, there was no internet, no YouTube, no podcasts.
If anybody had heard of it, it was from the Chick Tracts. I don't know if you remember those.
It was
from the devil.
Yeah.
And in fact, my dad came and played with us one night. I still have his character somewhere on a 3x5 card.
No kidding.
And we played, and he says, "Thanks very much." He went upstairs and said, "Nope, that's not from the devil. It'll turn him into a big geek, but not worried about that."
That's funny. That's funny. So how did that, the Dungeons and Dragons, how did it progress, and how did you move from there to tabletop gaming?
Well, we played a lot of different games back then as they appeared in the later in the 80s, Top Secret and Morrow Project and whatever we could get our hands on, Star Frontiers.
Yeah.
They were all awesome. Anything we could find. Car Wars, you know, these were fantastic.
God, Car Wars. Oh, I have built so many cars in Car Wars. They had the little cardboard chits for the cars, and you could customize like the left wheel, the back bumper, and we're old, Keith.
It's all good. Embrace it. So moving forward into high school, into college, kept playing, but it was less and less because other things. I mean, we found girls, you know, and cars, and so we strayed away from our one true love. And but in grad school, towards the end of grad school, one of my buddies, I met him sitting in a parking lot. We were reading the first book of Deadlands.
Mm-hmm.
And he walks by, walking his dog, walks by again. Finally, he sits down next to me and says, "Can I see that?" So, but a few weeks later, he says, "There's a thing you need to see." And I went over to his house, and he had Necromunda set up.
Nice.
And we had one set of minis. We had to make cardboard stand-ups for the other gang, and we played every day, and I was skipping grad school to play Necromunda.
So did you get your degree?
I did.
Okay,
I made it. my wife actually came to me a few months before the wedding, and she says, "Okay, I'm going to marry a doctor in October. It can be you if you defend."
That's
it's time.
That's great. So, Sarianne, let's get started. Now, what I want to talk about is first, can you introduce me virtually to your three boys?
For sure. So I have, like you said, three boys. My eldest, Lucian, is almost 13 now. I can't believe it. I've got a 10-year-old Marcus who will be joining us later on. And then I've got Alexander who is just turned 7. And it's funny because I found that within the hobby, it's really brought out different personalities, what they're interested in, couldn't be further from one another. And it's really shown just another dimension to who they are as little people. And, you know, I'm curious to see how that's going to develop over time as well.
Now, you mentioned that Marcus will be on the last segment. Do you consider Marcus kind of the one who is the most interested in the hobby, or are all three of them?
I think I'm a little biased because he's the one who has taken to the same, you know, games within the hobby that I enjoy.
Yeah.
My eldest was much more interested in Magic the Gathering, which is a game that my husband's really passionate about. I can play it. I don't really have much of an interest in it beyond the family pre-release, you know, events and things like that. Whereas Marcus, he's my painter. He is the one that has been playing Malifaux with me. He actually, our the very first USFO tour that we did here in Ontario, he was at that tournament and had an absolute blast.
That's great.
So he is most like me so far with what he enjoys within the hobby and that sort of thing.
Gotcha. Gotcha. And so Magic the Gathering, you mentioned that, you know, obviously your husband and your oldest son there, they like that. I would assume financially you guys can't afford to have more than two people playing that game. Because I love Magic the Gathering, but
definitely for my husband, he's got a very good analytic mind, and he's actually been finding ways to make the hobby as kind of self-sufficient as possible. So he's been able to really push our dollar and stretch it as much as he can within that, allowing him to, you know, keep, you know, building on sets. He's much more interested in standard than he is modern or things like that. And I mean, our eldest just kind of goes along for the ride. He plays whatever daddy builds him and goes from there. And
And again, this is we're going to have to rename this episode Craig's an Old Man, because I'm going to date myself again. So I was part of the alpha testing for Magic the Gathering. That's how old I am.
Oh, jealous.
Your husband will get a kick out of this. I bought my first computer in college by selling a full set of alphas.
My goodness.
And back then there was no eBay or anything, so it was all bulletin boards, and I sold it on bulletin boards for over $3,000, which was a lot of money back then. But it was a complete set of alphas, and then later I ended up putting together a complete set of betas and sold those off. And then I've always loved Magic. I don't play, I haven't played actively in 25 some odd years, but I remember the first time I played Magic, I knew, like, this was a big deal. Right. There was nothing ever like it before. And the first time I played it, I was like, I've never seen anything like this. And this is amazing.
Oh, absolutely.
What I never would have predicted is that it's been around. It's coming on 30 years now, I think, that it's been around. And it's bigger now than it's ever been. It's something else. A testament to the game, I'll tell you.
Absolutely.
Yep. So, Keith, virtually introduce me to your three boys.
So three boys, twin 13-year-olds, and a single 8-year-old. They all play soccer. They're doing pretty well in school. They ride their bikes with me once in a while, not as much as I want them to. You know, the other big hobby I have, and they're okay with it. And they started in on board gaming with us when they were small. The 13-year-olds, I don't know what age they were. They were playing the Memory and Parcheesi, maybe simple roll and move sorts of games. And we introduced them actually to Kids of Carcassonne. That is a great game for kids. It's flip a tile, put it down, score a point or two.
Right.
And you can control the length of the game by how many cards you leave in the game, which is great for these kids. And then we ease them up into regular Carcassonne. And the eight-year-old, he was earlier than that. He kind of just came along for the ride, though, because it was constant exposure to it.
Yeah. Yeah. And it sounds like, in talking with both of you, that there wasn't really this monumental moment where you had a certain birthday where you presented them with things in the hobby and said, you know, welcome to the hobby. It sounds like in all cases, in both of your cases, they eased into it. They showed some interest and they kind of grew into it. So, Keith, among the three boys, who actually is most involved in actual miniature gaming?
In miniature gaming, at the moment, is the eight-year-old.
Oh, no kidding. And,
he had a brief moment of fame last year when he attended his first Malifaux tournament at age 7. They made him the ringer. I purposely asked them to not put him head to head with anybody because we don't need them running up their differential on my kid.
Sure.
But they made him the ringer, and he actually won one of those games. I never
got a
chance to ask that guy if he had given it to him or not, but he loved it, and he was playing the tournament organizer in one of the games, and the TO says, this guy's going to take focus. And Eli looks at him, and he says, you don't take focus. You concentrate to gain focus.
And when I heard that, I laughed. I thought that was the best.
I do have to emphasize to my kids that it is awesome when they do that if they're polite in front of and behind those statements.
That's funny. So, so Sarian, for Marcus, so how did his path diverge, right? So your husband's, you know, concentrated on Magic the Gathering. Obviously his older brother is as well. How did he wander into, you know, following your interest in actual miniature gaming?
Well, at our local game store, I would run with a couple of the owners there. We would do paint jams, and every time we would have a paint jam, I'd open up, you know, to all three of the boys and say, would you like to pick a model? Generally, it was, you know, their lovely vast wall of D&D miniatures, which are nice and inexpensive. So it's like, go, you know, pick your poison. Which one would you like to? And he was really the only one consistently out of the three of them that was interested in it. Usually, you know, my eldest wanted to go play video games with the other kids in the back of the room. And so that kind of developed where when he was painting enough and had kind of a little mini army put together, I believe it was last Christmas or the Christmas before, he said, Mom, I'd like some, you know, miniatures for Christmas. And that was it. I kind of went, yay! And then I'm thinking maybe he might not have wanted to do that because then we kind of went a little bit overboard. And that was just, you know, getting him his first set of Bayou for Malifaux. He's got some Blood Angels. Oh. And it's a lot of fun.
Now, so it was kind of the painting that kind of pointed him in that direction. I mean, was that just a situation where, you know, it was spending time with Mom, or did you think he has some artistic inclinations that drew him to that?
I think at this point it was more just, like you said, it's being able to spend some time with me. We've got him his own little paint station set up in our craft room. And then I could be wrong, but I think that now he definitely still enjoys the painting aspect, but I think it's the playing that is really what's keeping him interested in it. He any opportunity he gets to actually go and play a game, he will. Whereas for me, I'm still, you know, given the choice between painting or playing, I will always go the painting route. That's just, and I think that will always be the case for me. But with him, you know, he enjoys it. Even when most of the time it's only over with other adults because we don't really have a lot of other children his age that play the same games and that sort of thing. And he still, he absolutely loves it.
That's great. So how about for Marcus, Keith? If memory serves, you know, I've talked before, all three of the boys have played miniature games before, right? Have played around with Malifaux?
No, absolutely. And my eldest by 1 minute, named Noah, he actually has brought home trophies and plaques from tournaments.
Wow.
Yeah, somewhere around here is a second place trophy, which I covet. he is consistently placed better than I have. He brings in the dreamer with the wall of stitched, and and there you go.
Sure.
And after he finished painting his third stitch together, he has put down the brush. He won't pick it up again. He's done. That's
got it.
That's the end of his hobby.
Yeah.
He'll play you though. And Jacob is also played. Jacob, the first tournament they attended, they were age 9. Dawn McCormick was running it. And she did a very nice thing. The first night we did a Henchman Hardcore tournament, and Jacob got the wooden spoon. But instead of a spoon, he got a brand new deck.
Oh, nice.
Throw away your old deck. This one has some luck.
That's great. Dawn's the best.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, she was the one who gave Noah those stitched together for that Christmas. So,
well, that's cool.
I have her to thank for all of those battles.
So I didn't realize that we had Dawn in common. I didn't realize that you knew Dawn.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. She's a great part of the hobby.
Yeah, no question. I miss her. She's not been nearly as involved as she used to be. But she was the henchman when I found Malifaux. And she was a big part of what grew what is now a very healthy community here in the, you know, central North Carolina area. So guys, what we're going to do, we're going to take a quick break. When we get back from this break, I want to talk a little bit more with Keith and Sarah Ann about how do you teach children who show an interest in this hobby, and what are some effective ways to kind of set the hook and, you know, get them to where that they can enjoy it right out of the gate and then potentially be able to grow into the game as well. So we'll be right back.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
So now that we kind of got an idea of, you know, how each of these parents kind of, you know, allowed or were there when their kids kind of grew into the hobby, I want to learn a little bit more about how they kind of taught these kids. So Sarah Ann, can you give me an idea, you know, how did you approach teaching something really as complicated? Let's focus on Malifaux. How do you teach something as complicated as Malifaux to somebody who's young and, you know, new to it?
Number one, I think, is just to remain flexible. You've got to, you know, gauge the interest level of the child more than anything else age-related. I think it's, you know, their maturity. And for us, what has worked really well is just to, you know, kind of let the children lead the introduction to it. They're innately curious. Play upon that. And, you know, if you introduce the game in a way that they're the ones asking the questions, you'll have a much better response, or at least I've found that you're going to hold their interest a lot longer. They're more likely to want to continue learning a particular game if you're letting them kind of guide it. So from Alifo, for example, with Marcus, it started out just saying, you know, let's work on movement. And I waited till he was at the point where he's like, okay, I'm bored with just learning how to move around the board. How do I shoot that guy? Or how do I, and just kind of picking up on their cues, which realistically is the same with any new player, really. I think you can't dumb it down too much to children, but.
Yeah, so I like the concept, Sarah Ann, that you mentioned there of letting them get to the point where they're asking the questions. And I'd like to flesh that out a little bit more. So is that a situation where you would present a concept and give enough for them to get started and then allow them to push you to kind of let you know when is the next thing to show them?
Yeah, that's almost exactly how it worked with Marcus. He, I think one of my biggest, perhaps, challenges was I constantly found I was underestimating kind of how much he was picking up and how quickly he was picking the game up. I, you know, kept trying to, you know, hold the conversation back or hold the instruction back. Whereas he was like, well, no, Mom, we've got this. Let's move on to the next one. I want to learn how to, you know, do focus. I want to learn how to make my gremlins shoot you even better. And it, I think once I realized, okay, let them set the pace and then kind of follow, it was much easier to kind of get into a really good routine. And that will follow through with whatever age, you know, or maturity level of the child that you're dealing with.
Yeah.
My youngest totally doesn't work the same way. I have to kind of like really baby because he's, you know, a million places at once and his mind isn't focusing. So it kind of allows you to adapt based on how the kids want to, you know, progress with their learning and that sort of thing.
How about for you, Keith? Is your experience similar or?
It's so similar. It's, I have very little to add. The need for flexibility is incredible. The best way to teach, we start out with a very bare bones style. We've just had a couple of friends join us for some Malifaux. We, other 13-year-olds join us, and we'll host little, you know, 6-person tournaments in the basement, henchman hardcore, nothing big. and these kids, you start out by giving them just this much. Here's how you flip a card. This is a duel. This is, and then they're like, well, tell me what's this? What did you just do?
Gotcha.
And we talk about those transitions of with the kids. You know, do you think Ayush is ready for this? Do you think Will is ready for this? Do you think, and we, you know, they start out and somebody has to teach them, tell them, here's how you move. You can move this far. This is what you can do. Then they start doing that. Then they get to the point where they're independently playing. They're able to actually play all the rules without somebody telling them each turn. And then beyond that, they start to develop a tactical feel.
Yep.
And then they pass me up. And
so I'd be curious, Keith, now Sarah Ann kind of talked about how, you know, one kid is not the same as the other kid. And especially you with twins, having boys of, you know, obviously very similar age, they're twins. How different was it for them? Not necessarily with Malifaux, but, you know, I know that they're into role playing and stuff like that. How different are the twins as far as how they approach or learn these games?
So, yeah, this is where they've really become different. In the last, we've been playing Pathfinder for the last, I guess, 3 years, but it really hasn't taken off until 6 or 8 months ago. Suddenly they wanted to play. They were like, yeah, Let's do this. And now Noah is focused on building the most effective combat monster he can find, checking this, looking at that, what feat tree do we go down?
Mm-hmm.
Jacob, so I should say that I play support characters when we play these games. I was GMing for a while. About 6 months ago, Jacob says, can I try it?
That's great.
And if I'm GMing, Jacob's playing a support character. He's played a bunch of bards, which I never thought a kid would do.
Yeah.
When he's GMing, I'm playing the elder in the tribe or a cleric or a bard or whatever. And Jacob is much more excited about the story and that aspect of it. Whereas Noah is absolutely excited about the mechanics.
Right.
So I'll have long talks about damage per round with Noah, and Jacob just zones out, walks away.
So it sounds like as a father, what you've had to do is adjust your approach, right? So depending on where the interests lie and where the spark is, you kind of build that up and work off of that.
And never forget which one you're talking to, because man, I cross those streams all the time. And the kid I'm with just looks at me and it's just like, I don't know what you're talking about.
I've got just one 6-year-old daughter and I forget her name. So I can't imagine having twins and remembering who I'm talking to either way. So Sarah Ann, you hinted this a little bit, but I want to dive into it a little bit more. How do you negotiate the challenge of simplifying things but not oversimplifying things? Is it just a matter of listening to the kid and letting them push you, or did you find yourself in situations where you said, I think that, you know, he's ready for this, so I'm going to kind of load this on for the next, you know, time we sit down?
I think it was a little bit of trial and error. I think when, particularly coming back to Malifaux, I was fortunate enough that I was learning the game not that much further in advance than Marcus. I've only actually been in the game for, oh gosh, I want to say it's almost coming up on 2 years now. Yeah, I think it's been 2 years. So for me, it was kind of a unique, not challenge, but opportunity to be able to say, okay, you know, I'm still learning the kinks of this game. I'm still learning a bit of the mechanics. Introducing it to Marcus and having him, you know, either get it, which more times than not, you know, get it kind of on the first go, and then he's pointing out what I'm doing wrong, which is always a nice,
that's funny.
Always,
yes,
a fun,
absolutely,
thing.
Absolutely.
But, you know, I think at the end of the day, they gauge their interest and their how much they're able to absorb if it's something that they're enjoying and if it's something that you're really passionate about. I think that's the big thing that I've taken away, is that it doesn't really matter how much time you have to spend on the instruction side of it. If it's something that you are genuinely excited to share with them, even if it's a game that they are going to do because it's, you know, something fun to do with mom and dad, but then not really want to pursue it on their own time, if it's something that you're really passionate and really excited about, then they're going to feed off of that. And it's going to be just that much more engaging for them. They're going to end up absorbing and taking away a lot more of these, let's be honest, like more difficult concepts, a lot of them, especially when we're talking about children around, you know, the ages of our boys, that it just, it kind of sinks in, and then it stops being like they're being instructed to, and more just, well, we're playing a game and, you know, here's the kinks and working it out that way.
How about for you, Keith?
Again, never underestimate those children. It's amazing what they know. I got home from work one day last year, and Eli met me at the door, and he's holding the copy of the Malifaux rules, which my other kids had never picked up.
Sure.
And he says, Dad, I think you might be cheating. And I said, well, what? And he says, you have a 7-card hand, and it says right here you only get 6. I said, oh, no, I'm not cheating. I just have Arcane Reservoir.
Right. You are cheating. You're playing Arcanist, but I know what you mean, Keith.
I'm not. I'm playing. I'm playing Neverborn Lucius. So
okay. All right. I'll give you a pass.
but Eli was playing Hoffman, and he was playing Red Hoffman at the time. And he says, "How do I get a 7-card hand?"
That's awesome.
And that's how he switched over to playing Dirty Arcanists. And
I do like that he phrased it not, Dad, I think you got this wrong. It was, Dad, you're cheating.
We have some very direct kids.
That's awesome. So, guys, let's take another break. When we get back from this break, I want to talk to both Keith and Sarah Ann, not about themselves as well as their kids. And I want to talk about how some of the things that we learn growing up with tabletop gaming, growing into tabletop gaming, and sharing tabletop gaming with others, what are some skills that kind of translate outside of gaming? So we'll be right back. Howdy friends, Craig here. Nothing makes Malifaux easier than having the right tools. Here at the Third Floor, we love all the licensed Malifaux goodies from Custom Meeple. Not only are they helping support this podcast, they sell custom-made weird licensed tokens and terrain. They sell it all. Crew boxes, terrain, markers, tokens, and even a 3x3 full Malifaux board. Custom Meeple sells a complete M3E token set covering every marker and token you need to play. Custom Meeple are the source for the official accessories for Malifaux. Everything is designed by hand and authorized by Weird Games. Check them out at CustomMeeple.com, that's with one M, or follow the link in the show notes. Up your Malifaux game and be sure to tell them Craig from the Third Floor sent you. If you use the promo code third floor friend, all one word, THIRDFLOORFRIEND, you'll get a 5% discount and help support the podcast. It's valid on everything except retail products and playmats. So one thing that I think about a lot, and I really, especially now that I've been a parent for, you know, 6 years, is I find myself realizing that there's certain things that I learned, you know, when we were talking earlier about, you know, playing D&D at 13 years old and, you know, being a gamer for as many years as I have. There's things that I either learned through gaming, growing up in gaming, or were nurtured. Maybe they were always there and were nurtured by gaming over these years that I apply to my, you know, adult life, both in my adult relationships as well as my professional life. So, Keith, I'd be interested, first of you as a parent, do you find yourself looking back or looking at your current gaming and going, you know, these are things that I use outside of gaming that really either I learned from gaming or I nurtured from gaming?
That's an interesting question, and it's kind of a hard one to separate out because gaming's been with me for a lot of decades. But that ability to cooperate and the ability to organize things. I mean, these are, you know, we go to leadership training class and they teach us all these things, but it's really just role playing. Just going through, here's how would you face this situation? How would you come up with a creative solution? How would you organize these people to enact that creative solution? How would you know when you were done? And these are just simple, this is just D&D. This is
You know, it's funny. One of the things that when, you know, have allowed me to be employable is my problem solving skills. It's something that's, you know, has been brought to me a few times as a quality that I bring to whatever company I'm working for. And I look back on it and I don't necessarily think that gaming taught me how to problem solve, but I can tell you I'm a better problem solver because of gaming. I would be curious to know, Keith, now looking at your sons and they're involving in different types of gamings, are there skills that you either think are being nurtured by gaming or do you think that they're discovering about themselves through gaming?
We know that this is good for math. I mean, all of my kids are they just do math fluently because it's, you have to get each thing done.
Yep.
So that's important. I push them towards writing just a little bit. I take, you know, I write journal entries after our games and I force them, believe me, to go in there and make at least one line edit.
Good.
That's all I ask for them. But I think that's important, is learn to read someone else's work and fix it.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a big part of this that's learning to talk to grownups as peers, being able to meet with a grownup on a level playing field.
Interesting.
And have a conversation with them. I see this, I'm more aware of it with their friends who are talking to me, and they'll be running a game and so they'll say, Keith, what does your character do? And they're just talking to me. It's not insulting. It's not impolite. It's just, this is the game. I'm the GM.
Well, it's the right context, right? Yeah,
exactly.
You might, in other contexts, you're Mr. Suderman, but in this contest, you're Keith the player.
Absolutely.
Yep. Yep. How about now, Sarian, you're a little bit different because you're not ancient like
well,
Keith and I are. and you, and relatively speaking, are new to it, just like your kids are. So, I'm going to rephrase the question a little bit for you. Are there skills that found a home in gaming for you? So things that you liked that, you know, you said, boy, this, I can really flex these muscles in gaming, or are there things that you didn't realize that you liked until you started gaming?
To be perfectly honest, the most obvious things are the idea of like sportsmanship and problem solving and just empathy in general. When you're playing with...
Empathy's big.
It's huge. When you're playing with other people, you have to be able to read, are they having fun? Are they having a good time?
Yep.
Are they even understanding, you know, what's going on in this group? But the big thing that was kind of an unconscious thought, and it was only put into words actually with a good friend of mine, Kim, who owns the game store that we frequent. Her big thing is, you know, this idea of being able to play. and to continue to play as an adult, and how that's a really important thing from a psychological point of view, from a, you know, mental health point of view, being able to have that ability to play as an adult, to flex these, you know, imaginative and creative muscles that in most other circumstances you'd be either looked down on, or people just think you're weird, or that sort of thing. And being able to have that freedom, I think for me as an individual, and then being able to pass that along to my children and say, look, it is totally okay to, you know, pretend that you are some fantastical creature and go through this game, and at the end of it, look back and say, okay, well, what did I pick up, and how is that going to relate into, you know, the quote unquote real world? And I think that's a huge, maybe even within the hobby, a very under, I don't know even how, like, I think it's something that innately we all acknowledge. We just might not be able to put it into words 100% of the time. So
I could not agree more. I think the concept of unstructured play for kids is something that it seems to be lost a little bit in the, you know, and I, my wife and I pull on this because, you know, my wife grew up very much in a structured environment. So she, you know, she had piano lessons, she had soccer, she had, you know, this lesson, that activity. And, you know, she was, for lack of a better word, her parents booked her, right? She was booked for these activities and it worked. I mean, she's a phenomenal human being, right? Whereas my family, it was far more unstructured. There was four of us, and I was the oldest. And, you know, my mom, my dad worked all the time. My mom could only do so much with four of us idiots running around. So there was a lot of us, you know, go keep yourself busy. Right. Go play. And we didn't have video games and stuff to do that with. And it was a lot of unstructured play. And I look back on that unstructured time, you know, as being where I nurtured and found my creativity, the ability to entertain myself.
Absolutely.
As opposed to being having to be stimulated all the time. So I think that that's really interesting. And I agree that as adults, not everybody, but a lot of us need it. I know I need it. I know that that ability to flex into that creativity, into that play, is part of how I recharge my batteries and do that. So when you look at it, you know, with the kids, do you see – what are the key skills? So we talked about math. I think the reading is a big thing, the problem solving. Are there aspects for your kids where you think that they have, and especially it's kind of neat because they are into different parts of the hobby. What is gaming allowing them to tap into? And I'd be curious actually about your son that's playing Magic the Gathering. What do you think Magic the Gathering has done for him?
I think it's been able to have him flex kind of the skills that he's good at in a different environment. You know, he's very strong from a math point of view, not so much, you know, the reading and writing, but the critical thinking and the problem solving. And at school, there's only so many finite ways that you can kind of push that and explore it. And with a game like Magic the Gathering, again, being that he's being pitted up against, you know, mostly just adults, it's giving him an opportunity to really kind of push himself and those skills in a way that's unique and challenging and, you know, so many different avenues that he can go in without even realizing that he's using those base, you know, mathematical skills, those problem solving skills. He's playing a game. So I think it's really allowed him to develop that skill set in a way that's not that structured. As you mentioned, you know, the structured school, you know, curriculum type of exploration. Mm-hmm.
So I'd be curious, Aaron, have you had a situation, because, you know, Magic the Gathering, it is, you get a chance to play a lot of different people. Have you had come across a situation where your son has played against somebody that maybe was a difficult person to play against? And I don't mean difficult as in they were really good, but have you had conversations you've had to have because they had a challenging human being on the other side? And I would imagine, especially if it was an adult, you know, they had to deal with bad sportsmanship, or, you know, just not a nice person. Has that come up?
Unfortunately, yes, it has. Back when he was really, he kind of peaked, you know, as far as interest. Now he'll still play, but he's not as interested. But he was probably, I want to say around 11, where he really got into it and actually ended up doing well enough that he was winning night or FMs. He was winning, not games day, but pre-releases, things like that.
Right.
And he did have at least one instance that I can think of where there was a bit of a sore loser on the other end. And I think that was compounded by the fact that they've lost to a small child.
Mm-hmm. Amen and to that.
Yeah. And it's something that, I mean, we're very open in our house as far as having kind of those more difficult conversations. And it was a conversation that my husband and I had to have of just, you know what, there are some people that just don't understand how to interact in a respectful way. There are people that are just not going to be nice. And it was, again, children are really accepting. So when it was actually explained, you know, he was a little upset. And I'm sure there's been other times too where he's had, you know, someone that either was not playing purely by the rules, yep, or someone that just was not a great, you know, partner to have across the table. And it's just a matter of talking it through them and making them realize that, unfortunately, that is a reality. That's part of life. That's part of any time you're going to have interpersonal relationships, and how to kind of overcome that. You know, yes, it sucks and you feel really bad, but what did you learn from it, and how not to act yourself,
right,
when you're, you know, in a similar situation, when you're feeling like you're losing and you want to go on that bent of being a sore loser. Well, remember how it felt to be on the other side of that.
I was about to say, what an amazing empathy lesson that must have been.
We had a similar thing at the end of a tournament. The whole ride home, one of my kids was just like, "Dad, that second guy I played, he was so mean. Yeah. I don't know what I did, but he was so mean." I found out later that the TO had to ask this guy to leave because he'd blown up at the next guy
he
played. But my kid, you know, I'm trying to talk him back through this. It's not on you. You played polite. You played well. You weren't cheating. I don't know what was wrong. But that's a hard lesson. That's hard for adults.
Yeah. Well, it's funny you say that, yes, because I've been thinking about it. And one of the things that, you know, is very important to me with my daughter is I want her to have respect for people in authority. I want her to be respectful to her teachers. I want her to be respectful to her friends' parents and to, you know, people that are older than her. But I also want her to be able to identify when that stops, right? And be able to say, well, this is not a situation where I'm going to just do what the adult says, or this is not a situation where the adult is exhibiting behavior that I should be mimicking. I hadn't thought about it until we were having this conversation where that, I mean, because the hobby has a huge range of ages that they come through, in some ways you're not thrusting is the wrong word, but these kids are now interacting with adults in a different way than they normally do. So, I'm hearing these stories, right? And I think about your husband. If I was watching a jerk play my daughter at a game of Magic the Gathering, it would take a lot. I think I could do it. It would take a lot for me to allow her to handle it up to a point before I would get involved. I'm not even sure what the question is here, but, you know, and same thing with you, Keith, when you find out that a guy was a jerk to your son, and this happens outside of gaming too, when you hear about somebody who's mean to your kid in school. But in the context of that, I mean, it doesn't sound like you've been in that situation, but I'd be curious as parenting advice for a new parent. How do you figure that out, Sarianne? How do you figure out where you kind of let them learn and handle that, or you say, you know what, this is a kid and adult interacting and I need to get involved?
Well, within the context of, you know, that event in a game store, a lot of hovering goes on.
I bet.
You know, it's having, making yourself as the parent, making your presence known without automatically or without being very, you know, sticking yourself into it.
Yep.
So you're giving the kids an opportunity to sort through it. And to be perfectly honest, a lot of the time, really all that you can do is just kill them with kindness, smile, kind of grin and bear it through it. And I don't know that we've ever actually had to step in. And I could be wrong. I can't speak for my husband, but I don't think there's ever been a time where we've actually had to step in,
right,
and kind of assert ourselves as the parent. But I know for sure there's been a lot of times where, you know, you just stand next to them or sit next to them and just watch how the game is going kind of as a spectator, but mm-hmm. you're giving them that moral support of knowing, okay, mom's there. But as a kid too, I know I wouldn't appreciate if my parent was always, you know, piping up or giving, you know, yep. some sort of input, right? So it's that I know that mom and dad are there, but not having to deal with them constantly interfering in the game that you're playing in.
The other thing I've seen, though, is that the rest of the community gathers round. They'll support the kid.
Yes. They, absolutely.
You know, they'll tap their buddy on the arm and say, chill.
Yeah.
Check or, this out.
You know, maybe that's too much.
Yeah.
Or, yeah, you got beat by a 12-year-old, but it's that 12-year-old.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. That's a good point. And I think that's something that I think we would all agree on is, in general, the gaming community is a pretty amazing community.
Well, and Malifaux has a phenomenal community.
I agree.
I've seen so many people welcome me and my kids in. I mean, the first time we played, we'd owned the game for 9 days, I think.
Yeah.
We played 3 basement games, and we were a mess. And they held the game for 40 minutes while we got caught in traffic, and we arrived, and we were flustered.
Cool.
And you know, Don made sure that everything was that we were settled, and then said go. And everyone put up with that, and it was extremely welcoming. The folks over at Gigabytes have been fantastic at saying
that's such a great store.
Oh yeah. And I, you know, when I first threw out there, hey, I'd like to bring my 3 young children to a tournament, they said, why are you even asking?
Yeah.
I said, because I have to ask. I don't want to crash the party with kids.
But that's rare.
It is, unfortunately, isn't it, Sarah Ann? It's frustrating how rare that is. Not every game store is, and I don't want to say kid friendly, but kid welcoming.
Yeah. It's more than just friendly.
Yes.
It's they're like, yeah, anytime. You know, and they made sure, you know, picking Eli as the ringer just to make sure that he was in a role that he could enjoy without getting trounced again and again.
No, I think that's very, very cool. So, guys, I want to take one more break. And when we get back from this break, I want to and we've kind of danced around this a little bit, but I want to get into some hardcore advice from these guys. So for those of you that are parents out there that either have some kids that are starting to express some interest, or maybe a niece or a nephew, I want to kind of learn some of the successes, some of the mistakes, and see what we can learn, and also talk about kind of transitioning when things transition from them playing dad and mom's hobby to them playing their own hobby. So we'll be right back. Howdy, friends. Here on the third floor, you'll find us playing Malifaux and other games on Mats by Mars. They are scratch-resistant, waterproof, wet-erase Merkle compatible, and lighter than neoprene. These mats use a new material that almost eliminates any glare. Mats by Mars gives you over 40 designs to choose from. Pick a mat size, pick a design, then choose an overlay like the one for Marvel Crisis Protocol or Malifaux 3rd Edition Strats and Schemes. It's going to speed up your deployment and the placement of strategy and objective markers. Until the end of June 2020, you can use the new promo code THIRDFLOOR620 to get a 10% discount on your next order. In the notes, you can ask for the Third Floor Wars logo to be put on your mat for free. Again, use the promo code THIRDFLOOR620, that's THIRDFLOOR620, to get a 10% discount. All the details are in the show notes. I really wasn't sure when the idea of this episode came together exactly, you know, how things would go, but this has ended up being what I wanted it to be for us to really kind of learn what's unique about the hobby from a parent adult aspect, as well as learning from a children's aspect and just the dynamic of parent child and things like that. So Sarah, I want to start with you. You look back on, you know, the time that you spent sharing this hobby, you know, with your boys. Are there things that you learned? So if a new parent came up to you and say, Sarah Ann, what is some good advice? What are some mistakes you made I should avoid?
I think the biggest thing, kind of twofold on both sides of the coin, was on the one hand, it's great to have a hobby that you're really excited about and that you want to have your children involved in. But I think it's you have to be very careful too to make sure that you're not pushing them into something when they're no longer interested in it.
Yeah.
And we've talked a lot about my eldest, Lucian in Magic the Gathering. He lived and breathed it for about 18 months. He, you know, that was all he wanted to do. And a lot of it was, I think, you know, he was on a bit of a winning streak, which absolutely is going to, you know, affect his, sure, his relationship and how much he enjoys it. And when he started losing a bit of interest, there was a point there where, you know, we were still kind of pushing him into, well, you know, why don't you make a deck and come out to this event, or, you know, let's see if you can try and win that game, Matt, again. And I think for a little bit there, we were pushing too hard. And I think it was for, you know, we enjoyed it. We loved the fact that we were able to go as a hobby and not have him be a passive bystander, but actually be a part of that entertainment as well. And I think you need to kind of make sure that at every point you're kind of checking in on, is this fun for the kid? Is this, yeah, something that they genuinely are having enjoyment for? Because it's very easy for us to get completely wrapped up into, you know, our hobbies, and we want to be able to, you know, shout from the rooftops how much we love it and bring everyone else into the fold. But when it's your kids, especially if they're a little bit younger, you got to make sure you kind of gauge their enjoyment level and their participation in it to make sure that it really is something that they want to do. And that was a bit of an eye-opener for us, because
I bet
we got excited, I think.
Yeah, and I bet it was especially challenging for your husband, because that was a truly kindred shared hobby between him and his son, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Whereas, and that's something that I'm mindful now this time around with Marcus being as involved with the painting and the Malifaux, which the painting, again, he's been not as interested in. And this time around, I can recognize that and just say, okay, I'll finish up, you know, your Bayou Gremlins for you, which, you know, he kind of left by the wayside. So he, mm-hmm, can still go play, because that's what enjoys, you know, what enjoyment he gets out of the hobby. So that was kind of a big thing to make sure that you wouldn't think to have to, you know, keep that kind of check and balance, but it definitely is important.
Keith, how have you navigated that kind of the migration of interest?
Well, it's a work in progress, and a lot of mistakes have been made. Like Sarah Ann mentions, mistaking your own passion for your child's passion.
Yeah.
Their interests change. They move on. They go to the next thing. We aren't playing any Malifaux right now. I would love to. I've set it up half a dozen times since we got locked in. And Eli has humored me with two turns of Henchman Hardcore. The other two just walk away.
Yeah.
And I just have to go, okay, stop. Yeah. And so, having that flexibility and moving to different perspectives on it. What's fun now? Is painting good? Is assembling good? Is it just play that's good? Do you what piece of it is exciting to them now? Currently, it's role-playing games.
Right.
We're going to ride that one out. We'll see what happens 3 months, 6 months, 2 years from now. I don't know.
Yep. So I'd be interested, Keith, because in a lot of instances, you know, you were actually playing one of your boys when you guys were playing tabletop games, whether it be Malifaux or not. Any advice there on how to be a good parent and opponent at the same time?
I'm going to say that I don't believe in throwing games to kids.
Yeah.
I actually, part of why I play so much Lucius is because the kids are playing these massively killy teams. So Lucius against Hoffman into Reckoning is the game I've played more than anything at all. I pick a that's how I handicap it,
mm-hmm,
but I don't throw the game. I don't make bad decisions purposely. I do make bad decisions. Don't get me wrong.
Right.
but I set it up. I'm pretty good at spending my minis to get in the way of the other guy. That's the thing I've learned more than anything, is how to die well.
Mm-hmm.
But Quirkle is one of my favorite tabletop. I mean, it's just six different shapes with six different, yep, colors and pattern matching. It becomes harder if you don't have a full hand of tiles. You start, mm-hmm, with six. Well, when somebody wins, they have to turn one down. They only get five the next game, and nice. So on. So we handicap that. So if you're winning a lot, it gets you down to three tiles. You can't win with three tiles.
Sure,
and,
sure.
And so games like that, we find ways to handicap it to make it hard. And that way the kid doesn't feel like you're letting them win. And it's a point of pride for the older kids because they're, look, I'm handicapped.
Yeah, yeah. So I'd be curious, Aaron, I'm sure there has been instances with one or more of your boys did not lose well. Because that is inherently not a skill that we are born with. It's something we learn how to lose. I'm very good at it if you need any advice. But what are some advice you can give to – and I need this for my daughter because she is a sore loser. How do you teach that skill how to handle a loss and grow from a loss in a gaming context?
I think first and foremost, in the aftermath of, say, said game where they've lost, you need to give them space. I don't know, you know, how old your daughter is, but even with my almost 13-year-old, when they're in the thick of it, when they've just lost a game, any kind of words of advice or encouragement or anything that you're going to say to try and, you know, get them through it, they're not going to hear you.
Yeah.
So I think realistically, they, you know, they're in their head, they're full of emotion at that point. And I think it's just giving them the space to kind of work it through. And then we've had that happen quite a bit where you just have to talk them through it and say, look, okay, yes, it's crummy what you're feeling, and validating those feelings as, you know, something genuine, and there is nothing wrong to be upset about losing. And then turning it around and say, okay, well, why do you think you lost? What things do you think you could have done differently? And sometimes there won't be anything.
Right.
There's going to be, you know, umpteen games where it was circumstance, it was luck of the draw, or there would have been a reason, but they're not sure what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And that has to be acceptable too.
They're
and
not
I think
there
the
yet.
Big yeah. thing is making sure, yeah, they're not there yet. And even as an adult, you know, when we're trying things, it's knowing that failure in the kind of most base form of it is acceptable, because as long as you learn from something and grow, and I mean, that's an overused kind of phrase, but it really is true that as long as you've learned from something, you're failing forward.
Yeah,
right?
You're absolutely
and
right.
And just reiterating that to the little ones once they've gotten over their tantrum.
Yeah.
and that's part of it, right? That's valid.
And modeling that good behavior, modeling what you want them to learn. Oh, man, you beat me. You played a great game.
Yep.
Yep.
And
consistency.
We always shake hands. We work hard to, you know, look our opponent in the eye and tell them congratulations if they won, even if we really, really don't like how they won.
On the inside, you're
So Keith, of your three boys, who do you think is the sorest loser, or who between the three of them has really done the best job of handling that?
I won't name names because I know they're
going
to listen to this
and
they will absolutely lord that over each other.
Well, so let's make more abstract then. So what are some of the big challenges you've seen then, as far as sportsmanship is concerned?
Sure. No, I do have one of my children will relive that moment again and again and again. And I've sat and talked with him afterwards and said, you know what? You lost. It's okay. It's okay. It's great that you're debriefing this, that you're looking at it and saying, how could I do better? But don't lose sleep over it.
Yeah.
Big deal. It's a game. And so that's been our biggest challenge there.
That's hard, though. That is hard for some kids. It's hard for a lot of adults.
It's hard for adults.
to keep that context of, I am passionate about this hobby, but let's take a step back. And it's what my in-laws call, you know, Craig's dolls, you know, and that's what they are. Right. I push dolls around a table. And that doesn't make it not important or not fun, but it's easy to lose perspective.
It is. It is. And trying to help them understand why we're here.
Yeah.
We're here to have fun. You know what? If you're not having fun, if half the time you're not having fun because you lost, then that's not good. Then you need to adjust what you're doing. And and they're pretty good about that. I've been very pleased, very impressed with their ability to get perspective on it. So,
has there been any issues, Sarah-Ann, with your boys as far as them being competitive with each other, or do they not really play each other? They've kind of all found their own lanes.
Yes and no to kind of both respects. So they, on the whole, they do tend to have their own interests, which for the most part will keep them kind of in their own lanes separate. One thing that we, as Keith has discovered with his boys, we've just recently gotten our boys into doing D&D role-playing games. And of course, that's something that the youngest wants to be a part of.
Yeah.
But he doesn't really... He doesn't play by the same rules that everybody else does.
Yeah, that's tough.
And that adds a lot of contention between him and my eldest, who, you know, by the end of a game will just be like, well, then I'm just going to kill his character and, you know, just out of frustration.
Yeah, I've seen that solution more than once.
Yeah, so that's been a little bit, not so much competitive amongst themselves, but just trying to navigate being able to get through a game where everybody's still kind of enjoying it and not trying to take it out on each other, any of their frustrations and that sort of thing. And that's been a little challenging. And I don't think we've quite come to a perfect solution on, you know, how to let the youngest play, but then still not have him completely kibosh some, you know, big game that the other two have kind of developed. So
that's a big challenge. That's a big challenge because you can't lean too far one way or the other, or you're going to end up satisfying nobody. You know, you just got to play it by ear, I think, for lack of a better word, and think back on all the mistakes you made later.
Yep.
Again,
oh, absolutely.
Flexibility.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, we're going to take a break here in a little bit, Sarah, and talk to the kids. But before we do that, is there one or two games, and it doesn't have to be tabletop games or anything, that if there's either parents listening that don't play games with their kids, or about to have kids, or have nieces and nephews, or neighbors and things like that, what are one or two games that you would recommend as good gateway games for children who don't really play board games at all or tabletop games? Is there a couple things that you would recommend them to pick up at the game store?
Well, our family favorite, and we started again because it was very simple for youngins to learn, and I think my youngest started playing when he was about 4-ish, is Suro. It's a tile-based game where you, every turn, you take turns putting down a tile that will have a little pathway, and you have a little character that's supposed to be your dragon. And, you know, the whole idea is you want to be the last one on the board that hasn't either run off or run into opponent. And that, even now, the kids will still, because it's quick. You can have
a game
depending on how many people are playing. It's a fantastic game. It's always different. We've brought it, you know, to friends that have wee little ones, and we've also played it as a bunch of adults. So it really has stood the test of time. And then one that we just recently got into because my youngest has a just unfathomable love of unicorns right now is Unstable Unicorns, which just, I mean, the pictures on the cards are absolutely adorable. It is full of ridiculousness where you can, you know, attack each other with narwhals and llama corns and things like
that.
So it's
fun.
Just, it's a ridiculous game and it is fantastic.
That's great.
So yeah, that's, and again, it's fairly quick that you can get through it.
How about for you, Keith? Is there a couple games you would recommend people to look at if they want to, you know, introduce their kids to gaming?
You know, I like the Kids of Carcassonne and Carcassonne really a lot for teaching kids, mainly because you can make them much smaller. You can downsize those stacks of cards, and kids just don't have the attention spans we do. So being able to play a game beginning to end in 8 minutes is a beautiful thing. We do the same in our role-playing games. We meet for 90 minutes or 2.5 hours for a marathon session.
Sure.
And that's a great way to do it because your energy stays up the whole time. You start to see the energy flagging. You're like, this would be a good time to stop. We just put out whatever we're playing. Dominion's another really good one for kids. They pick up on it so fast. And and if you vet the cards beforehand, pick, you know, don't put six attack cards out there. You're going to be playing for 3.5 hours. Just give them something that they can race to the finish on.
So Keith, and I'm going to ask Sarah Ann the same question, because I know, you know, you play role-playing games with your boys and she plays role-playing games with your boys. What do you think is a good age for role-playing? Or maybe what's too young?
I don't know what's too young. Okay. My seven-year-old loves it. And I've played with five-year-olds who thought it was great. Mm-hmm. We played Pathfinder, or we played, my parents did foster care when I was a kid, and we had seven-year-olds come in, 7, 10, and 11 years old, and we played Top Secret with them, which is a pretty gritty game.
Yeah.
But when you look at what these kids play on their video games, I'm like, well, I'm not introducing them to violence. So,
sure.
And I try to play down the human-on-human killing. So that's where the D&D and Pathfinder are better, because we can go fight monsters.
Mm-hmm.
But stay away from the dark topics. They don't need to know how Rise of the Rune Lords got started, how there's a half-demon child.
Yep.
That doesn't need to come up.
Sure.
They just need to know there's a bad thing happening and let's go fix it. Grab your swords.
How about for you, Sarah? And if a parent was going to say to you, you know, what's a good age for me to introduce my kid to role-playing, what do you think that might be?
Well, I think it really depends on how much effort you want to put into the DMing of it yourself. We've started with our kids really, really young, but we didn't actually use a game system. So we just kind of, you know, came up with our own stories. We just had, you know, you're going to use a D6. That's going to be your basic for kind of everything. And we had a babysitter that was very much into the hobby as well when I was first working. And I mean, I think Alexander was like 3, and they were just, again, it was completely off the cuff,
No
formal structure to it, but it really introduced a lot of those base concepts that allowed them to kind of carry into. And it's only actually this year that we've started doing any sort of formalized, okay, now you have a character sheet, these are your stats, this is what your character can and cannot do at this stage.
Right.
And it really allowed that transition to be a lot more seamless, because they were already aware, again, it was theater of the mind, right? You know, whether we played with character or models or not, they were already well versed in that world and that idea of role playing. And it didn't have to take some sort of fancy game system to do that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That makes a ton of sense. So guys, what we're going to do, we're going to take one more break. When we get back from this break, I'm actually going to talk to one of the kids for each of these guys. And we're going to kind of we've got all the wisdom we want from the parents. Now we're going to talk to the real bosses and see kind of what their perspective is on that. So we'll be right back.
Hi guys and girls, ladies and gents, I'm Kevin Smith. I'm the Southwest boy living in the southeast of the UK. I contribute $18, or £13 a month, to Third Floor Wars. And why? Well, I work 50 hours a week as a supermarket manager, have 3 children, so in my spare time, I just want to play Foe. And if I can't do that, the next best thing is listening to the Third Floor Wars podcast. Not only do I hear about what I play and the gaps in my knowledge, but I also hear about all of the crews and tactics that I need to beat, and often how they've even performed in recent tournament reports. The online store has some great merchandise, including t-shirts and mugs to buy now to show your support. You should be a Patreon too. So pause this episode and go to patreon.com and search for Third Floor Wars, or grab the link in the show notes.
What is it worth to you to get this podcast on a weekly basis? Is it worth $1 a month? $5 a month? $20 a month? If you'd like to help support the work that we're doing here on Third Floor Wars, please go by our Patreon. We're at patreon.com/thirdfloorwars. There you can pledge at any level, any dollar amount. Whatever you give us will help us put out quality content on a regular basis and hopefully make tabletop gaming a little bit better for you every week. Hey, want to take a moment to give a shout out to our most recent patrons, Nick Cromarty, Blair Thompson, Sean Ratner, Christopher Rue, Cody Ravicki, Nathan Howe, Brian Gresham, Max Adams, and Alec Kay. The only reason we're able to put out content on a regular basis is because of you and all of our other patrons. Thanks. So now that we've had a chance to talk to both a mom and a dad of kids that are playing games, we have a real special treat because I've got two new guests. We've got Jacob and Marcus. Now, Jacob is the son of Keith, and you heard during the previous segment, has been running some Pathfinder games and has played Malifaux. So, Jacob, it's good to have you, buddy.
Thanks. Yeah, it's nice to be here.
Good. And then our other new guest is Marcus. Marcus is Sarah's son. Marcus, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So, Jacob, let's start with you, bud. I want to get kind of an idea of the type of non-video game games you've been playing lately.
I do a lot of RPGs. I'm in a game of D&D 5e, and I'm running Pathfinder. We do board games every once in a while, so we just play just Dominion and other pretty simple board games.
Uh-huh. Very cool. How about you, Marcus? What games do you like to play?
I like to play Malifaux and a couple other board games, like D&D.
And D&D?
Mm-hmm.
What is your favorite board game?
I'd say Malifaux.
All right, cool. So, Marcus, here's a question for you, buddy. You know, I'm sure you also play video games too, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, what is different about playing tabletop games like Malifaux versus video games? What do you like about tabletop games?
Well, you get to use your brain more than you have.
Yeah. Do you like that aspect of it?
Mm-hmm.
How about you, Jacob? What do you like about tabletop games like RPGs and Malifaux?
I like it like every time you play, it's different. And video games are usually the same a lot of the time.
Yeah, yeah. So, Jacob, obviously, you know, your dad likes games. He's been playing games long before you came onto the scene, right? Even before he even met your mom. So I'd be interested, when did you start showing interest in the game? So do you remember when you first said, you know, boy, I know Dad plays these games. I wonder if I'd like to play these games. Do you remember back that far?
So board games was pretty early. Like I played Little Kids of Carcassonne, which was Carcassonne except easier. Mm-hmm. And that was like 5 years old, I think. And then once I got to 7 years old, I started playing Necromunda and Mordheim, which were both dead games at the time, but still. So I started playing those, and then I got into all these other games, and at 9 years old I played my first Malifaux tournament. One day lost terribly because I wasn't very experienced, and then the second day got second place.
Yeah, but And do you remember what made you want to play the games? Was it just something you thought your dad was doing was cool, or was there something else?
So it was kind of that it was cool, but also it was fun. You get to use your brain a lot in them because you have to be really smart with what you do.
Yeah.
Like in all the strategy games, like Necromunda and Malifaux, there's a lot of strategy that goes into them.
Yeah, no question about it. How about you, Marcus? Do you remember when you started to show interest and wanted to play these types of games?
I think it was once when my mom asked me if I wanted to go with her to a Malifaux game. And I went with her. And when I got there, I decided I liked Malifaux. So then I started playing.
Very cool. And I do have to ask you, what faction do you play in Malifaux?
I play the Gremlins.
And what do you think is great about Gremlins? Why do you like Gremlins?
You get a lot of them, and you can do quite a lot of damage with explosives.
You sure can. So who's your favorite master in all of Bayou?
Maybe Ophelia.
Ooh, Ophelia's cool. Now, are you pretty good at knowing how to switch out those upgrades and everything?
Not really yet.
She can be tricky that way. Now, Jacob, with Malifaux, what faction do you play?
I play Dirty Arcanist.
Oh, boy. Your dad didn't tell me that.
I started playing Karis recently.
She's good.
And she is awesome because she just blows everything up and lights everybody on fire. But when I first started playing Malifaux, I played Perdita because my dad's friend told me that she was simple and did a lot of damage, which was definitely true.
Yeah, and she's really good in 3, too, in 3rd edition.
Mm-hmm. I've played her a couple of times.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
no, at the tournaments that we go to, because I have all the minis painted for her and not Karis yet. So.
Gotcha. So, Marcus, question for you, bud. Now, I know, obviously, you play games with your mom and your dad, and probably with your brothers as well. Have you had a chance to play these types of games with people that aren't your family? Do you have any friends that you've played these games with? Or do you mostly just play with your brothers and your mom and your dad?
I do go to a tournament at Jack's Island Queens.
And I play. What did you think about doing that? Was it fun to play with somebody other than just your brothers and your mom and your dad? Did you like playing new people?
Yeah.
Yeah. How about you, Jacob? Have you had a chance to play with, and not necessarily Malifaux, but your RPGs? Do you play with stuff outside of your brothers and your dad?
So, my friend Ayush and my friend Will, we both, like, my friend Will is running D&D with us, and my friend Ayush just plays in both, and they've both played Malifaux before, and yeah, it's just super cool, having them playing with us.
Gotcha. Now, do you, Jacob, did you introduce these games to them, or did they already like these games and you guys were already friends?
So my friend Ayush had no ties to board games or role-playing games or any games at all. And we just introduced it to him and he liked them. So then he started playing with us. Oh, and my friend Will, we found on Next Door Neighbor with like for a D&D game because we just wanted to try something new.
Yeah.
And now we're all great friends and he's running for us. He already knew how to play D&D.
Oh, so that's interesting. So you actually met a new friend through gaming.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, cool. And is he your age?
Yeah. So the way that we knew each other, but we didn't like really know that we knew each other because we were in the same band class at school. And then we found each other, our next door neighbor, and started playing. And when we like met each other in real life, we just like had a moment where like, I know you.
Just didn't know you shared that same interest, right?
Yeah.
That's cool. That's cool. So Marcus, what do you think is the hardest thing about learning to play Malifaux? So if somebody's listening and they're a cool kid like you and they want to learn Malifaux, what do you think is kind of the hardest thing to learn about Malifaux?
Learning how to use every character carefully.
And how did you get better at it? So how did you learn that?
Just playing against my mom's friends and a couple of my friends.
And you know, playing Malifaux, has that made you have interest in playing any other games like that, or are you pretty much just a Malifaux guy?
I don't really like Malifaux didn't really make me play any other games.
I gotcha. How about you, Jacob? What was hard, you know, back when you were 5 years old and 7 and so on and so forth, what was the hardest thing about learning how to play these games?
So it was kind of about strategy of how to use your guys carefully and not just like charge in and all die. and just strategy. That was the hardest thing.
So I'd be curious, Jacob, is there anything that your dad did that you think helped you get into these games or help you learn these games? Was there something that that he did that you think just made that process easier?
I think it was that like he put himself on our level by handicapping himself. So we would have an easier time playing against him, but we would still be playing against somebody who would be trying their hardest and not just let us win.
Right, right. So he gave himself a handicap so that he could play hard, right?
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense. How about you, Marcus? Was there anything that your mom did that made learning Malifaux easier?
Not go, like, not try as hard as she could.
Yeah, so kind of like with Jacob, what Jacob's dad did, which was kind of give you a chance to actually play the game as opposed to just beating you up the first time you played?
Yep.
That's cool. Well, guys, I appreciate you coming on. I think it's really neat to know that guys your age are finding these games, and it's not just us old dudes that like to play these games. I really enjoyed my time with you, and we'll go back and we'll talk to your parents here for a second. But I really appreciate you guys taking the time, and I hopefully look forward to seeing you guys at some point playing in the USFO Tour at the championship, so you guys can play me and beat me, because we both know how terrible I am at this game, right? All right, guys. So it's always interesting to get the perspective from both sides of anything like this, both from, you know, in this case, from the parental side, and then get a chance to actually talk to the kids themselves. Really enjoyed this time. We're back with Keith and Sarah Ann. Sarah Ann, is there anything that you'd like to plug?
Well, I would really appreciate if any of the listeners would like to check out the blog that my husband and I have started. It is still a fledgling a little startup. We only started producing content back in January. It's jacksonthenet.com. And it started out where a lot of the terrain and scenery building that we do for the various games that we play, we're getting a lot of questions on, well, how do you do it? And so it's just been a great way for us to kind of document our processes, our thoughts on that, and then slowly expand because we have, you know, such a wide range of interests within the hobby as a whole. Just an opportunity for us to kind of share what we love and what we're passionate about with everyone else.
I've been reading, and I got to tell you, anybody who's listening who wants to see some really neat kind of phase by phase, step by step on terrain, and a lot of that terrain is scratch built, which I think is really cool. That's what I've been enjoying the most, Sarah, and I'll be very anxious to see kind of where you guys go from here as you expand out, because like you said, it's young, but I was impressed when you pointed me to it at the quality of the content, and we'll link to the blog here in the show notes, of course. How about you, Keith? Anything you want
to
plug?
I listen to a couple of podcasts that I really enjoy for Pathfinder. There's an actual play podcast called Glass Cannon Network, and I listen to that on my commute. The other one, I know, Craig, is Tabletop Talk.
Who's heard of that one?
I know it, but I really do listen to your podcast a lot.
I'm glad.
It's a fantastic way to pass the time in the car on the way home, and it gives me some ideas about what to try next. So
okay, thank good. You for well, that. I appreciate that. Well, guys, I can't thank you enough. First of all, for the two of you to come on, and also for allowing your kids to come on. It was a really neat idea, and I think that everybody can take away things, even if you don't have kids, from this conversation, because really what we're talking about is people in the hobby. I appreciate you guys coming on. And for those of you that stick to the end, thanks for listening. Take care. Be sure to check out our shop on thirdfloorwars.com for the latest gaming apparel and gear. While you're there, check out how the USFO Tour is shaping up. How does your conference compare to the others in the United States? Where do you rank nationally? Get those models built, painted, and on the table so we can see you at the U.S. Masters Invitational in October of 2020. Also, rate and write a review on this podcast for us. It really helps us find people almost as cool as you are. Thanks for listening. Howdy, friend. Craig here. Is this episode making you realize you need to buy some models? Gadzooks Gaming is my favorite online retailer because of their large selection, killer prices, and great customer service. Don't you hate buying an entire crew box when you only need one model? Gadzooks sells crew box models individually and saves you a ton of money. They even have free shipping to the U.S. and Canada if you spend $100 or more. Swing by GadzooksGaming.com and make sure you tell them Craig from the Third Floor sent you. All the details are in the show notes. Howdy, folks. Craig here. Now, if you love gadgets as much as we do, you're going to love the new Third Floor Wars gadget bundle from Schooner Labs. Branded with the logo of your favorite podcast, it comes with two measuring multi-tools, a compass stepper for those tight and important movements, along with a compact dashboard to track your turn, strat, and scheme scoring, along with your soul stones and pass tokens. It is the perfect bundle for anyone who plays Malifaux or just wants to look cool while doing it. The link is in the show notes. Check them out and help support your favorite gaming podcast. All right. So I'll bring us back from the kids segment. Keith, is there anything that you wanted to plug?
Not really. Okay. I mean, I've got nothing. I've got everything I want.
Cool. So what I'll do is I'll go to Sarianne.
That's a good place to be.
Yeah, I'll talk about her blog, and then I'll ask you if you have anything to plug. You'll say no. And then we'll close out.
I don't know. There's a couple of podcasts I listen to.
You should. Plug them.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. And then what I'm going to do, guys, at the end of this segment, I'll go to a break and say that we're going to talk to the kids. We'll figure out later when that'll happen, but I'm going to then bring us back for closing. So I'm going to close with you guys. It'll give a chance for us to do plugs and things like that.
Okay. Sounds good.
Cool. Let's see. I left with you, Keith. So I'm going to start with Sarianne again. Okay.
Sounds good.
Keith, I'll probably start with you because I started with Sarianne last time.
All right.
And I think I'm going to kick it off with talking about ourselves first, and then we'll migrate to the kids. So what are things that we as adults find ourselves applying concepts that we have either nurtured or picked up in gaming?
And isn't this a hard one because it's been with us for so long?
I know. All right, I'll bring us back. Very good, guys. Very, very good.
Hey, we're hitting a stride here.
I know.
Yeah. And Sarianne, I feel bad because you have a bit of a delay, I've noticed.
Yeah.
But I think we've been navigating it all right, though.
Yeah.
And it'll disappear when I shift everything in post-production.
Yes.
But it makes it a little confusing.
Yeah, I don't know why.
But that happens. It's not like you're, 1,000 foot, 1,500 miles away from me, for crying out loud.
Well, just pretend that I'm on another continent or something. We have foreign correspondent here.
That's right. All right. Let's see. Sarianne, I'm probably going to start with you, if that's all right.
Absolutely.
All right, good. All right, I'll bring us back.
Man, I want to meet this 10-year-old painter.
You know what? It's funny because he... And I think all the boys are like chomping at the bit to, get involved a little bit more too. So I'm hoping once all the coronavirus stuff is done, we'll actually be able to start attending some events down in the States, because I know everyone's really anxious for that too.
Yeah, I miss it terrible, I'll tell you. I'll be anxious for it to start again too.
You know
Cross
what?
Our fingers.
I just realized we never mentioned my kids are in role playing now. So that's where they've gone to.
Very nice.
We'll work that into a little bit later.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's been where it's taken off in the last six
months.
Oh,
that's fantastic.
That's cool. All right, I'll bring us back. So my guests are Keith Suderman and Sarianne Leahy. Lahai?
Right? Leahy.
God damn it. Hold on.
It's the damn French names.